Bow hunters are some of the hardest working hunters there are. Most of us work hard all year long just to get a couple weekends or burn our vacation time to sit in a tree. And just like the American blue collar worker, we're trying to balance work, family, faith, and a little time for ourselves in the great outdoors. Now let me introduce you to Trollco Clothing, a brand built by blue collar workers for blue collar workers. Workwear, comfortable tees, hoodies and hats for both men and women, Trollco represents the hardworking American. So whether you're operating heavy equipment, wrenching on engines, or in a factory living that shift life, Trollco has your back, literally. Head to trollco.com/hunting. That's trollco.com/hunting and enter the discount code Empire25 for 25% off of your first order. Trollco, for the hardworking American.
You're listening to the Sportsman's Empire Podcast Network, and this episode is brought to you by Interstate Batteries. For all of your battery needs, visit your local Interstate Batteries retail store. Interstate Batteries, outrageously dependable.
Two Good & Co. coffee creamers are made with farm-fresh cream, real milk, and contain 3 grams of sugar per serving. That's 40% less than the 5 grams per serving in leading traditional coffee creamers for a rich, delicious experience. Whether you enjoy your coffee hot, cold, bold, or frothy, Two Good coffee creamers make every sip a good one. Two Good coffee creamers, real goodness in every sip. Find them at your local Kroger in the creamer aisle.
Where's your playlist taking you? Down the highway? To the mountains? Or just into daydream mode while you're stuck in traffic? With over 4,000 hotels worldwide, Best Western is there to help you make the most of your getaway. Wherever that is. Because the only thing better than a great playlist is a great trip. Life's the trip. Make the most of it at Best Western. Book direct and save at bestwestern.com.
This episode is brought to you by Peloton. Break through the busiest time of year with the brand new Peloton Cross Training Tread Plus. Powered by Peloton IQ. With real-time guidance and endless ways to move, you can personalize your workouts and train with confidence, helping you reach your goals in less time. Let yourself run, lift, sculpt, push, and go. Explore the new Peloton Cross Training Tread Plus at onepeloton.com.
President's Day savings are happening now at the Home Depot with up to 40% off select appliances. Looking to upgrade your fridge? Check out LG's newest model, serving up ice in all kinds of styles. Cube, crushed, craft ice, and now new mini craft ice straight from the dispenser. From cold brew to fizzy favorites, these refrigerators will have you entertaining like a pro. Shop President's Day savings and get up to 40% off, plus free delivery on select appliances like LG at the Home Depot. Free delivery on appliance purchases of $1,498 or more. Offer valid February 5th through the 25th. U.S. only. See store online for details.
Hey everybody, and welcome into the Wing & Tail Boys podcast. I'm Angelo.
I'm Chris.
And thank you for joining us. We air a podcast every week on Thursdays, and thank you to all of you who have gone out of your way to give us a 5-star review. It goes a long way into helping our channel grow. We ask that if you haven't yet, you please go down and leave us a review if you enjoy what you hear. On today's show, we're going to be discussing what we're doing now to get ready for the upcoming hunting season with the little bit of time that we have left, and what our expectations and goals are going to be for this upcoming season. I know that Chris has been out in the field working on what he's got going on, and why don't you start with telling us a little bit of what you've been doing up until now?
All right, so up until this point, I've really been focused primarily on our New York property. For those of you who listened to our first two podcasts, you know that we were fortunate enough to have our parents purchase us a piece of property for us to enjoy as a family. It's about 120 acres, give or take. And right now we're managing 1 acre's worth of food plots. And then the rest of it right now is just bedding cover and just normal travel cover. What we're looking to do moving forward into the future, not to get too off track here, but we are looking to manage this, have about 10 to 15 acres worth of food plots, another 20 to 50 acres worth of bedding cover, and the rest just kind of growing up thick with a place for the deer to be. So up until this point, we've been focusing a lot on the food plots as well as moving some stands around and moving some cameras around. And we're going to talk about how I use those cameras in just a little bit as we progress through this podcast. more importantly, over the last week or so, we've really been tightening our bolts and nuts, right? So what we've been working on is gathering our info that we need to be successful this year and just kind of organize everything. And what I mean by that is making folders with the season dates and maybe a projected schedule of what we want to, where we want to be on specific days, and just getting an idea of, because we're hunting primarily New Jersey, New York, and Pennsylvania this year, just trying to get an idea of when we could hunt bow in those states, what the bag limits are, when, you know, each state opens, just so that way we can have an idea of a timeline as we go through the season. What about you, Inch?
Yeah, you know, most of my preparation up until this point really has kind of just been getting my gear set up, making sure that all my stuff is in working order, making sure that I'm checking and rechecking my gear. I know that there was a couple things that I wanted to change up from last year, so I'm just working out the kinks, trying to get that stuff set up and making sure that it's working for me, making sure that I'm going to be able to get up in the tree the way I used to be able to and not have any of the changes that I've made really impede my progress in that aspect. You know, one of the other things too is, like you said, we're going to be focusing on hunting in different states. So, you know, you've had the ability to hunt in upstate New York in the past couple of years that you guys have had your property. And this is going to be my first year kind of hunting in out of state. So a lot of my preparation has actually been e-scouting. You know, we've done a little bit of boots on the ground scouting in upstate New York. We're still in the process of trying to carve out some time to be able to get into PA. A little bit of my modern hunting style is kind of like the spot and stalk, you know, bump and dump, kind of, you know, a little bit of that kind of aggressive style, but not too aggressive. So, you know, there is going to be a lot of the hunting that we do saved for certain times of the year. We've come up with a schedule of the different opening dates of the different seasons. So we're hoping that, you know, obviously everyone would hope for success, but some of those dates lining up might be making us forced into a certain hunting style, you know. So with the rifle specifically, a lot of the out-of-state hunts, because I haven't had to get my boots on the ground and I haven't done a lot of scouting, you know, I plan on doing some tracking. It's something that I've really elevated my game on in the past couple of years. So hopefully we can get a nice spot and stalk kill on camera. I think that's going to be one of our goals for this year. A little foreshadowing there for you.
All right. So let me ask you this. Talk about spot and stalk. You talk about bump and dump, and not getting too specifically into it. We can talk about that in a later podcast if we'd like. But out of those two, which one do you think you'd be more likely to use early season?
Early season, you know, if it's a property that I haven't hunted in the past, and for some reason, whether it be, you know, we hunt mostly public land. I specifically hunt exclusively public land. And, you know, there has been a time where I've walked into my spot and I go in and there's a guy already setting up or something's going on or, you know, whatever happens for some reason.
I think we've all had that unfortunate experience.
Yeah, I mean, there's nothing worse than getting to your spot and there's a truck parked where you were hoping to put your truck. But you know, so sometimes there's, you know, early season, I would say, if I'm hunting a new property or if something kind of throws a curveball into my day and I have to go hunt maybe an area I'm unfamiliar with or something like that, early season, I'm probably, you know, one of my strategies that I really like it with the spot and stalk early season is if I'm in a property that I haven't hunted before, I really like walking the perimeter regardless of what's there. I know that, you know, everybody will tell you, you know, e-scout, you know, get up to the top third, try to find one of the points that are right above water, try to see if you can find some thick cover in there, and those are great too. But if you're in a spot where you don't really know, learning the land first and finding out where the pressure is and finding out where the other hunters are putting their boots so that you could find the spots that are not pressured, that can go a long way into helping you find some of those bigger bucks than maybe just a couple features on a computer screen.
Absolutely. And, you know, being that we're both from the same general area in New Jersey and we've hunted a lot of the same places in the past, now I've moved out to Pennsylvania. And in all my times of hunting New Jersey, this one spot that you and I hunted together last year is a spot that I plan on going back to this year. And even after having 8-10 years of experience hunting in this one property, last year is really the first time I said, okay, I saw this buck come from this direction this year, and I want to know where he came from. So let me start following this sign. And I really got in. Actually, my wife and I took the dog out over the summer and just started kind of walking these deer trails. And I started to find all these pockets of thickets within the state forest. And what I noticed was everywhere else in this forest is wide open, except for these pockets of thicket. And you might have, you know, 1 or 2 acres of a thicket and then everything around it is open with just some ferns growing and stuff. But we all know that that does nothing for us come the season. There's no cover. There's no fern coverage. All those low growing shrubs, for the most part, lose their leaves. So in my head, I'm trying to think, what is this property going to look like when it comes time for hunting season? And it's amazing how even after hunting this one particular patch of woods for so long, how I found something new just simply by trying a different tactic. In the past, what I've always done is walk through the woods a little bit, find some sign. You and I were just talking about it yesterday. One of my favorite things to hunt is an area that has poop that is all different ages. If I find poop that's from today, yesterday, a week ago, this morning, a month ago, I know that these deer aren't just passing through the area. I know that they're frequenting the area. Now, I don't know what deer that is, but depending on the size of the poop, obviously a fawn's going to be smaller and an older deer is going to be a little bit bigger. So, but that was about the extent of what I did. And this year and last year, I'm really trying to make a point to get out there, find the sign, mark it on my apps, whatever app you choose to use, and just creating a pattern. And what I found was when I walked this one spot last year and didn't really pay any mind to where I was, just kind of followed the pattern, went down the ridge, went up the ridge. And when I got home and looked at all the sign that I had marked, it was very clear that this buck that I was following, or maybe 2 or 3 bucks, who knows, was really walking a very specific trail, a very specific loop. And I think I've got, based on the old data that I have from hunting this spot for so long, as well as the data that I've collected over the summer, I really think I'm able to put together a really great plan to at least put myself in a position to have the most success at this one spot in New Jersey moving forward. Now, you and I are both fortunate in a sense that where you work in New Jersey, you can slip out of your job and be in a tree within 10, 15 minutes. And I have the same luxury where I work. I just got a job here out here in Pennsylvania, and just outside of it, there's a beautiful state park, and I'm allowed to hunt it. And it's just an awesome opportunity to slip out Monday through Friday and hunt PA. So we've been talking about kind of putting together a little schedule or something. And the way it's kind of playing out for me this year is that the weekdays are going to be dedicated to hunting my home state. And then the weekends, I'm going to have to decide, where am I going? Am I going to go to New Jersey? Am I going to New York? And like you touched on earlier, that's really going to depend on the successes that we have earlier in the season.
Yeah, I mean, everybody is probably going to try to plan out their hunting season. Everybody's got family. Everybody's got friends that they want to hang out with. So they're going to try to juggle whatever they can so that they can maximize what they're able to accomplish. One of the things, too, is, you know, sometimes things don't go your way. Sometimes, you know, you're hoping that, you know, oh, if I can get a doe down early and I can, you know, start hunting bucks early because I'm going to be hunting in a section in my state that allows early access to the hunting land, but you're required to harvest a doe first. And if I'm able to do that, then I can probably put a buck down and now I can have time to do with my family. But again, like you said, you know, winds can shift and bucks can start changing their patterns. And then next thing you know, you're hunting with a muzzleloader in your hand and you still got no meat in the freezer. So we've all been there.
For all we know, those deer that made that sign last year could be gone. They could have been hit by a truck. They could have been harvested by someone else. They could have died of old age. Who knows?
And on public land, you know, all those things are possible. And another thing that's possible is they could have been scared off. They could have been, they could have said, hey, listen, they figured me out and I got to go find a new way. Because, you know, those deer are really going to pattern you just as much as you pattern them. They are not stupid. They will not tolerate you kind of walking around. And one of the things too, for new hunters, you know, when you're going out and you're doing the scouting, understand, it's no problem to go out there. And like I said, you know, earlier, I'm at very aggressive hunting style. I will get in their bed. I'll find out where they're at and I'll try to find a way to hunt them. Very rarely do they hunt. Do they bed down in the same bed? So they're going to be moving around. And if you're going in there and you're putting some scent down in there right now, it's probably going to be fine. But for some of the newer hunters that are looking to go in there and maybe they don't have the ability to scout in the beginning of the season, then they're going to be doing some of this, you know, on the fly scouting. You know, you have to understand you might want to hunt in a specific spot. And then you say, okay, well, I've located where this deer is, and I'm just going to maybe hunt a little bit further back because I don't want to ruin my chances in spooking this deer away. You know, one of the things that I've kind of developed in my strategy to hunting deer, and the reason why I kind of have this aggressive style, is because I find that, you know, for me, it's not always going to lead to success. You're going to have those ups and downs, but I feel like I give myself the highest probability of getting in this buck's bed, getting into his living room, and having a high probability of a high quality shot where he's going to come in close before he detects my presence, right? So it might be a weekend, or it might be I see something on maybe a quick scouting that I have I go in there for just a scouting sit. Maybe I just stay a couple, maybe 50, 75 yards away from where I really honestly think things are going. And then the next day, like an observation sit. And then the next day or two, I'm in there and I'm in their living room. I'm up in their grill and I'm finding out, how do I get my access in there? How can I get up and close? And you know what? They're going to be moving around that area in the dark, in the daylight, when you're there, when you're not there. They're going to know something's been there, right? So some of the areas that you've hunted, some of the areas that I hunt with public land, they've got trails. People are walking their dogs. People are jogging. People are biking. They're used to the human scent, but they're used to the human scent where it makes sense, right? So if we're going to be walking off these trails and we're going to be giving them clues on where we're going to be, where our scent doesn't make sense, you know, we really got to make sure that we're in and we're out, and we're either going to give them time to relax, or we're going to be up in their grill, and we're going to be executing our plan.
So you touched on a couple really cool things there. First and foremost, I love that piece of advice to new hunters. Don't be afraid. So what? How many times have you been out hunting and you shot a deer or spooked a deer? Next thing you know, they come right back over the hill to see what that was.
Yeah, they all have different temperaments. You know what I mean? I heard, I'll reference The Hunting Beast, if anybody's ever heard his podcast or seen any of his content. You know, one of the things that he says is when you get in there and you get into their face, you know, there's deer that are going to spook really quickly, and there's deer that might not really be, you know, bothered by your scent. And one of the examples he gave that to that situation is, picture yourself, let's say you're on a road trip or whatever, for whatever reason, you end up having to go get something to eat and you're in a bad neighborhood, right? There's people who are going to sit down right by the door, put their back to the door, sit down, enjoy their meal without a worry in the world. Me, I'm going to sit in the back of the restaurant with my face facing the door, and I'm going to keep my eyes on whoever walks in, just because I'm going to be evaluating the situation and you know, maybe just feeling uneasy. Maybe that's paranoia, but those bucks, those deer, those does, fawns, whatever it is that you're out there looking for, they've got the same difference in temperaments, right? Some aren't going to mind your scent. Some of them might not be mature enough to know this is something that I should run from or should be aware of. You know, those mature bucks, you know, most of them, I'll say, are going to not really like that you're in there. But yeah, like you said, some of them might just walk right back up to you.
Yeah. I mean, not to go down the rabbit hole too much, but I'm a detour real quick to an old story I have actually hunting with your dad. When we were younger, your dad took me on my very first muzzleloader hunt. And to be honest with you, I don't even know if I was big enough to really handle the recoil of a 50 cal at the time. So we go out hunting and he takes me to this one spot and we sit on this rock wall and we were hanging out for the day. And all of a sudden your dad nudges me. He goes, "Chris, we got two doe coming up over the ridge." I go, "Okay, great." He goes, "All right." He's whispering in my ear the entire time. And he's like, "Okay, put the gun on the rock wall, put the gun to your shoulder, nice and easy. Take a deep breath. They don't know you're here. Calm down. And whenever you're ready, just gently squeeze the trigger." So I gently squeeze the trigger. Boom. There's this big cloud of smoke from the muzzleloader. And all of a sudden we see my deer runs to the top of the hill, rolls over, and the other deer just keeps going. There were two doe. We're sitting there celebrating. Your dad's like, "All right, give me that. I'll reload it for you." So he reloads it and gives it back. And he goes, "Chris, another one came." I go, "Should I shoot it?" He goes, "No, give me that." And he takes the gun from me. He goes, he shrugs his shoulders and just like gets his shirt nice and loose. Frontal shot, like 120 yards, puts it right down the chest. And the coolest thing about it was not just that we had a situation where, you know, we shot a deer and another one came back to see what the hell just happened. We had a situation where when we went to go recover our deer, they ended up dying back to back with each other. So it was just a really cool experience, you know, uncle and nephew hunting together side by side, go to recover the deer and those deer expired side by side. And it was just an awesome experience. So we're building memories, but at the same time, just to show like deer are very curious. And as long as you don't give them a reason to not come back, chances are they're going to come back. But anyway, like I said, I didn't want to get too far down the rabbit hole. Moving forward.
No, yeah, but listen, hey, for the new hunter that's still listening, you know, it doesn't necessarily just have to be luck either. You know what I mean? If you're doing what you need to be doing to walk through the woods with the wind in your face, right, working through the wind, one of the biggest things I'll tell a new hunter, right, just make sure the wind's in your favor. Make sure you're hunting the wind. It's, you know, it's one of the things that's going to help you a lot is making sure that these animals don't even know that you're there. And like you said, they're curious, but again, if they don't know what's going on, they don't, you know, a gunshot can be confusing even for, you know, us to hear. It's like, oh, where did that even come from? You don't even know where it came from sometimes. Mm-hmm. So if they haven't seen you, if they haven't smelt you, if they haven't heard you and they don't really know what's going on. I mean, again, you know, we're there to harvest. We're there for, you know, to bring meat home. And, you know, if you're going to go out there, you know, like you said, don't be timid, don't be scared, go out there and, you know, learn from your mistakes if you make any, but don't be scared to make any.
Right. And just one more thing touching on this. I heard on a podcast, and I really wish I remember where I heard this. I would love to give credit when I'm bringing up stuff I've heard from other people. Unfortunately, I don't remember, so I apologize. But I heard somewhere recently that obviously deer have their three main senses, smell, sight, and ears, right? And the younger a deer is, the more of those senses need to be triggered for them to bug off. So a 1 or 2 year old deer may need to hear you, see you, and smell you before they're freaked out and they get out of there. A 4 or 5 year old deer may need to hear you and smell you, or smell you and see you, and trigger two of those three senses. But when you get into those mature bucks, those 6, 7 year old bucks that have been around the block, have had a lot of encounters, they just need one. Or sometimes I even have that sixth sense where they're just like, something doesn't feel right. I mean, anyone who's spent enough time in the woods has had an experience like that, where everything is going, deer's coming in, you're ready, and all of a sudden, right before the deer comes, yeah, you just need that one more. How many times do we hear that, even on like YouTube, whatever? You know, so just something to keep in mind is that as you start raising the bar on your expectations and looking to harvest a more mature deer or a more challenging deer, understand that that comes with its own challenges as well. Not that we're trying to put you off, just to make you, you know, aware of what's coming. Now, something that you talked about was on-the-fly scouting. And I absolutely love that. And it's something that I just recently started. I would say last year is really the first year I really dove into it. Now, on our private property, we manage that with cameras. We use Cuddyback cameras. We use the Cuddy Cell Link, 24 cameras on one home camera. And we're able to monitor our food plots and some well-known deer trails. On state land, on the other hand, I don't have a single camera out. I'm going based off a sign and what's around, what did I see last year? And that's really what I'm working with. But what I've come to find is with the more information I have in New York, the more cautious I tend to be with the way I hunt. I only want to go in the woods on certain wind days, or I only want to go in when the temperature is between a certain time, or, you know, this buck wasn't around last year at this time. Whereas last year, when I walked into New Jersey, it was the first time I had been to that piece of land in probably 5 or 6 years. And when I walked in the woods the very first day, I found a little bit of sign. I pushed a little further, and I ended up finding 2 or 3 scrapes and 2 or 3 rubs in a cluster, all within like 20 yards of each other. That's where I set up. And the very first time I hunted there in 5 or 6 years, I had a buck encounter my very first day. And then I went back a couple weeks later and had an encounter with a doe, which didn't end my way, but it is what it is. But what I've come to find is sometimes when you don't have all of this extra data to get caught up on and kind of overthink, and you just kind of go in and do what the woods are telling you to do, sometimes you can have a lot more success with that just because you're putting yourself in a situation that maybe you wouldn't have been in if you had those cameras.
No, yeah. You know what? And hunting with cameras has obviously made the effectiveness of a hunter rise exponentially. I mean, with the invention of the cell cameras, I mean, the harvest rate has gone up. I wouldn't even be able to tell you the numbers, but I guarantee you it's a big, big jump. And, you know, for me, I have used cameras in the past. I intend to use cameras in the future, but I actually don't use that many cameras. And for me, you know, everybody's got their own goals for the hunting season. And, you know, I would love to shoot a monster deer just like the next guy. And, you know, I put my time in and I make sure that I'm looking for a sign of mature bucks. And, you know, a lot of the thing is I don't have cell cameras, you know? So for a lot of the people who hunt on private land, cell cameras are great. You do that on public land and you're probably not getting them back. So, you know, I've had that experience in the past. I've put cameras out and I've, you know, either lost them or, you know, I've even had the tricky guy come by and just take the batteries out, or we'll just pop the SD card out and leave it on top. Let's just, people have done just about everything you can think of just to keep me from getting any information. And you know, I'm not that type of guy, but you know, unfortunately there are people like that in the woods. So, you know, for me, I'm not really utilizing the cameras that much, but for me, my goals are, you know, I want to hunt mature deer. And with the experience that I have, I know the sign that mature deers leave. So, you know, if I'm going to be going out to the woods, yes, I am going to be picky in some of the areas that I hunt. And I know that there are some areas in New Jersey that have restrictions, you know, 3 points or better. So if, you know, if you're going to be, you know, if a shooter comes in, you know, at the very least, you know, you're looking at a 6-pointer. I might not necessarily pull the trigger on that. But, you know, one of the things that I like doing is when I get into the woods and I beat a deer, whether it's I beat their sense of smell, I beat their eyes, I beat their ears, I know that I've accomplished something. And even though I might have things in my favor like e-scouting or, you know, topo maps in my pocket, whether it be with me using Onyx or Spartan Forge or any other type of application on my phone, or whether it's been scouting that I've done, if I can get in there and I can put myself in a position where I'm hunting on a travel corridor, or if I'm hunting on some fresh sign that I just found, or if I know that there's some bedding nearby and I've got a deer that comes in within bow range or, you know, better, and I might pass on it, I count it as a win in my book. You know what I mean? So, you know, there's guys out there hunting specific deer. I haven't done that in a long time. For me, in the state that we live in, and specifically me for New Jersey and in the Northeast, we know that we're not going to be we're growing these Boone and Crockett deer that are grown on ag fields day in and day out, 365 days a year, where they've got, you know, food and nutrition that's growing them, and they've got the genes to back it up where they're growing these deer. So for me, I want a legal deer, and if I get that, I'm happy. You know what I mean? So, you know, there's different expectations and there's different goals that everybody has for themselves. And for new hunters, you know, I think a lot of it is this intimidation factor. They go on YouTube, they go on Instagram. Everybody's got these giant deer, you know, they've got a wall full of them. You know what I mean? And, you know, I've shot deer and, you know, I've got one mount here, I've got a Euro mount there, but I mean, I don't have a plethora of things to show off. You know what I mean?
Neither do I.
For me, you know, a lot of this hunting is, you know, providing for my family, putting meat in the freezer. And, you know, I'm not shooting, you know, yearling deer, stuff like that. But, you know, I pride myself in being able to find quality animals that are going to be providing not only for me, but, you know, for those around me too.
Okay. So it sounds like your short-term goal for this year is to get on a deer that you could be proud of. And I think, which I think we're going to touch on this in just a little bit, is try to find success in each of the states that you choose to hunt this year. Am I missing anything there?
I mean, no. We and you talked a little bit, and we joked a little bit as well. You know, we're fortunate enough to have this podcast, and we're hoping that we could reach out and we could represent the Northeast. We've got some things in the works with some other groups that we're hoping we can bring you content and spread our wings, and we intend on spreading our tentacles out too to the surrounding states. One of my goals for this year is I want to complete a trifecta. We're looking for a deer in New Jersey, New York, and Pennsylvania. Right now, I'm not going to put it too high. I'm just going to go for a deer in each state. If it ends up being, you know, there's a doe toss in there. If they're all bucks, that'd be great. If they're all giants, that'd be even better. But, you know, that's going to be our one goal this year.
There you go. I mean, not to get too crazy going down the rabbit hole with this one, but with the food industry the way it is these days, we'll just leave it at that. I also think it's important to fill the freezer whenever we can. Now, before we get into anything else here, what's a long-term goal that you would say you have? Like, you're saying that for this year, your main goal is to try to complete that trifecta, try to shoot a deer in all three states. And that's awesome. Now we're building this from the ground up, you and I and our family and friends, you know, who come along for the ride with us and our listeners as well. What's a long-term goal you have for yourself? What's something that you would like to see yourself maybe not complete this year? If you do this year, that's awesome. But what's something that you hope to accomplish, let's say 5 years from now, with this platform that we're starting to grow and you know, the future experiences we plan to have?
Yeah, you know, we've talked about it, I think, in past episodes. We really want to focus on growing the sport, making sure that more people, and if not more people, which we hope more people, but if not more people, the people who are here are growing their interest, understanding the reason that they should be spending more time outdoors, understanding that it not only helps them develop skills that can help them in their life, but it also will help grow their spirituality and maybe their, just help them out with, you know, getting away from some of the stuff that we have on our daily life, just really clearing the, you know, the files in the bank that we hold some stress and just really kind of relieving that. So one of the things that I really want to focus on long-term is developing relationships with the community. And most of all, we know that for ourselves, we have young children in the family, and we really want to help them understand what the reason that they should find value in being in the outdoors is, right? So we just want to build that in them, instill that in them, and in, not just in those young ones in our family, but for people all over the Northeast and all over the country for that matter. Really just want to grow the sport and, just help educate as many people as we can.
Yeah. I mean, and what more could we ask for, right? There's a lot of different industries that you can get into where there's a lot of competition. You know, you go on Wall Street, it's, you know, who can make the better trade and who can make the most money. I really feel that for the most part, the majority of us who are in the hunting industry, the outdoor industry as a whole, I really think that while we might have some friendly competition on a year-to-year basis, whatever the case may be, I really think at the end of the day, we really want success for everybody. Whatever that success may look like to you, whatever makes you happy going into the woods and coming out of the woods, or however you enjoy the outdoors, right? But I think growing that next generation is extremely important. Now, before we move on, you had mentioned about getting in, doing some boots on the ground scouting. And yesterday, you and I had the opportunity to get out into some public land ag fields. And I think we must have covered, I think, at least 300, 400 acres worth of soybean fields. Covered, surrounded by hardwoods in every direction, just hardwoods. And I have been literally talking this spot up for months. It was water access. I wanted to slip in from the back on the downwind side of the food plot of the crop fields, never even have an idea of the deer coming. I've been talking it up for a year now. And you and I finally decided to hit the ground yesterday and go and take a look. We really had some high expectations. But the truth is, with the exception of a couple doe and fawn groups and two or four younger bucks that we saw, we really didn't see anything that we expected to see there. And not to say that it's a terrible spot. That might be something that somebody else wants to go there and hunt and would be extremely content and happy bringing that home. But by us taking the day to go out and do our scouting, we realized that this isn't a spot for us to spend some time in this year. We saw some stuff that we liked that maybe if it continues to progress, it might be something that we hunt in the future, next year or the year after. But for this year, instead of wasting a day of hunting during the season, we took a day in the off season to get in there and do some scouting and realize that, you know what, maybe this is a spot that we can cross off our list and forget about for the year.
Yeah, I mean, we're talking about preparation, what we're doing to get ready for the season up until this point, and getting your, you know, boots on the ground, like you said, and finding out where the deer are, where the pressure is, where you want to be at. Definitely do that stuff now so you're not wasting days when you're in this tree stand. You never want to have a wasted hunt. You should never be hunting a throwaway hunt. You should have the education. You should know what you want to be doing, where you want to execute. And, sometimes that, you know, you need multiple spots. There's a lot of people who don't necessarily have a lot of time to do that. And there's a lot of people who are only able to hunt on the weekends. And, the one thing I would say is, as much as you can, try to find a handful of spots where you can hunt on different winds, right? You do not want to over hunt one spot and just hitting the same tree, same hillside, same creek bed every single weekend, week out, weekend. And, you definitely want to spread your wings. As far as the sign that we saw, we were kind of discouraged. That could be because there's no competition, right? There could be one giant deer in there, and he doesn't feel the need to go around and causing a ruckus and raking trees and making a huge mess because there's really nothing competing with him. Right. But, usually you'll see some markings, right? So even deer that are not competing, you're still going to have markings around food. You're going to have markings around bedding. You're going to have markings on some corridors, just, not even for competition with other bucks, but just because you're communicating with the other animals around, the other deer around, not only bucks will make scrapes, but mature does will make some scrapes too. They'll open the floor up and they'll mark their scent, trying to give the appearance that I'm either, you know, ready to accept courtship, or, you know, I want to know what else is around. So, you know, you'll see those signs, and we just didn't see it.
Yeah. I mean, and one of the things I tell my students all the time is there's nothing wrong with making a mistake, because in my opinion, the only mistake you can make in life is not learning from a mistake. And that applies obviously in the math class, right? Where you make a mistake, you learn from it, and you figure out how to not make that mistake in the future. But the same thing applies to literally anything in life, specifically in our hunting and our scouting. You know, growing up, I asked your dad one time, I said, "Hey, uncle, can you show me how to use a deer call?" He goes, "You want to learn how to use a deer call?" I said, "Yeah." He goes, "Okay, put it in your mouth and blow it." He said, "When you see a deer, put it in your mouth and blow it. And if a deer comes closer, you did the right thing. Do it again next time. And if you didn't do it properly and they walk away, you know what not to do next time."
And then tell me what worked.
Yeah.
And then tell me what worked, please.
Yeah. And then, you know, when I was a kid, I was like, what in the world? What kind of instruction is this? And the older I get, the more important I learn that it is to learn on your own. Whether you're successful or you're unsuccessful, you're learning something along the way, as long as you're willing to see that silver lining in what it is that you're doing.
Yeah, I mean, you know what? It might seem weird, but if you're a new hunter specifically, take notes in the woods. I mean, you don't have to necessarily have a pen and paper in your pocket, but take notes, mental notes. You know, you can go into your phone, whatever. Think about what time of the year it is. Think about what season you're hunting. And if you're hearing vocalizations being used, mimic them, right? So if you hear a doe bleat, or if you hear a buck grunt, or if you hear a snort wheeze, or if you hear, think about real quick, okay, well, what's the situation around me? Am I something that caused this? Did they see me? Did I spook them? If not, eliminate yourself from that situation. And then think about what's going on around me. What could they be communicating about? What could they be communicating for? And then bring that into your, you know, mental bank and save that for another time where, you know what, maybe you're sitting in the same situation. You say, you know what, let me throw that call out there. And, you know, you'll be surprised at, you know, how much that can work.
Yeah. I mean, and anything can work on any given day, right? So, you know, what works today might not work tomorrow. So don't be discouraged if you find success one day or one year and the next day or year you don't. Again, just make a mental note out of that and make sure that proverbial toolbox, put as many tools as you can into that toolbox to help you be successful in any given situation. Now, I have one more question for you, and I'll answer this question as well when I go around to talk about my goals and such. But you talked about doing a lot of e-scouting and figuring out where you want to narrow down in the woods to get your boots on the ground and do your scouting. What are some things that you do to narrow down where you're going to scout before you get in the woods? And what are some things that you're looking for when you get there? How do you decide whether you want to go in the woods? So I guess let me rephrase. What are some things that you do to narrow down where you e-scout? And then how do you decide if you're going to go scout those areas in the summer, or if that's going to be a spot that you do walk in, do some scouting, scout to your tree, and then set up? How do you pick them, and how do you differentiate?
Most of my scouting is going to be during the summer. I'm not really going to do a lot of in-season scouting unless, like I said, the opportunity arises, or if it's just the hand I'm dealt that day, you know, for whatever reason it is. You know, hunting in a different area that I've never been before, sometimes you don't have the opportunity. Maybe you could do a little bit of e-scouting. But the biggest thing is you can't just pick a spot on a map and just say that that's where you're going to hunt. You can't do it. It's impossible. Yeah, there's fine. There's spots out there that you say, "Oh, this looks great from the map. It's got all the features that you would potentially want." And then you go there and it looks nothing like it, right? Or there's a guy sitting in the tree. So anytime I'm e-scouting, I've got a bunch of different places that I'm going to check out on a property. And, you know, just like we did yesterday, we started on one end, we went to the other, we went up, we went down, you know, we went all over looking for the spots. The one thing that I'm looking at when I get in there is for the least amount of pressure, right? So getting back to the map itself, I'm obviously going to be looking for benches. I'm going to be looking for saddles. I'm going to be looking for choke points. I'm going to be looking for funnels. I'm going to be looking for maybe some areas in the satellite photos that might have transition lines. I'm going to be looking for diversity in the foliage. I'm going to be looking for access. I'm going to be looking for water. There's a million different things. You can get a headache talking about all the different things you want to look at. There's no perfect spot. Right. In my opinion, there's no perfect spot. If you're talking about isolating mature deer, in my experience, I'm a top third hunter. I like to chase those bucks a little bit in into the season. You know, they can be patterned early season, but when you're talking about middle of the season, when you got those cold fronts coming in, they're going to be walking those benches. They're going to be walking those saddles. You know, you can get those thermal tunnels that, you know, are really hard to hunt, and that's why they love it. It's so easy to be protected. You've got escape routes from every which way that you want to go, and, you know, it's really in their favor, and that's why they really like being up there. When I take that and I get myself into those areas where I'm scouting, I'm looking for, first of all, and first and foremost, I'm looking for hunting pressure. I'm looking for any signs of deer hunters being in there, whether it being old stands, whether it be, you know, you hate to see it, but a lot of people leave trash behind. If I see anything that looks like it's fresh, I just don't even want to be there. I don't care what the sign says. You know, small deer can rub trees too. You know, they always say, you know, small deer don't rub big trees. They'll rub whatever they want to rub. You know, they Absolutely. Might not do as much damage. You know, when you see a mature buck's rub. But first and foremost, I'm looking for hunting pressure. And then if I can find a place that's got no hunting pressure, I'm looking for something that's got thick cover. Hopefully it's got access for me. It's kind of one of the last things I'm worried about. I will bushwhack if I have to. I'm looking for thick cover, and if I can see anything that's nearby that's a decent food source and maybe got some water, especially early seasons, got some water, I mean, that's where I'm looking to hunt. You know, and if it doesn't have that, I'm out. I will go to I'll go to another place.
Now, you said you're willing to bushwhack and get into those thicker areas. Now, is that something that you have thought about getting into in the summertime, early season, maybe a month or two before the season starts, and trimming some, never mind shooting lanes? I think we all kind of prune our shooting lanes wherever we need to. But have you ever thought about getting in there and kind of, you know, trimming off an access route? Because not only would it make it easier for you to access the tree, but very often the deer end up using that same route as well. So it's kind of like a twofold piece of it.
You always run the risk of alerting things to your presence whenever you do too much to change the landscape. I have done it in the past. I have made some mistakes doing it. I've learned from some of those mistakes, and plus, you know, I'm a little bit older now, so, you know, I'm not bushwhacking as much. I am willing to do it if I need to, if I really feel like I got to get in there. But as much as you can, if you can disturb as little as possible, you're probably better off going that route.
All right, fantastic. Do you have anything else that you want to add about your goals, expectations for the year before we transition here?
We're going to transition into what we can do from now getting to the season, since we've talked about what we've planned on preparing for. One thing I do want to touch on, though, is I want to thank some of the partners that we have. I want to thank, first and foremost, Andover Hunt and Fish, one of our best partners. Is always looking to help us. Anything that he can do for the channel, we really appreciate his involvement. We also want to thank Fire Knock, Big D Custom Sports Shop, Dart and Bows, Black Eagle Arrows, Antler Grow, and lastly, Cuddyback Cameras. We thank you for your partnerships and all that you do for the channel.
Fantastic. Yeah. And they've been awesome so far. So hoping to continue growing those relationships as we go here. Now, before we get into those expectations for the coming year, if we have the time, I'd like to talk about some of the goals that I have for both the private property and the public land. For any of you who have been listening to the podcast as of late, you'll know that I've been managing our New York property for about 4 years now. For the first 2 years, I kind of started getting my feet wet, did a little bit of food plots, had some successes, had some not so great successes or failures, for lack of a better way to put it. Now, since then, I've really fallen in love with the forest management aspect of things. So I actually went out and acquired my pesticide applicator's license for the state of New York. And what that allows me to do is to go into the forests and do basically TSI work using pesticides and herbicides that just the general person couldn't do. Like, for example, Angelo, if you wanted to go and help a friend of yours, or, you know, you were like, all right, you know, just give me $100 and I'll go hack and square some trees for you. Technically, by law, you're not able to do that. You know, so you would have to call someone like me in who's got their license and to go in and do that. And through doing some hack and square jobs and some mitigation of hay-scented ferns that stop the forest from growing, I've really started to learn the time of year that's the best to do that kind of stuff. But I've really fallen in love with the land management aspect of things. And to be completely honest with you, I think I love it just as much as the act of physically going in the tree and hunting. And it really, what it's done for me is it's really it's really expanded my hunting season. So now instead of hunting season only running from September to January or September to February in some states, now I get to extend it throughout the whole year, because if I'm not sitting in a tree hunting the deer, I'm then prepping my land to be able to get in a tree and hunt those deer. So it really makes it now a 365 day a year hunting season, which is awesome. Now, because of that work and that time and that management that we put into our property, we're really trying to maximize what we do and minimize what we take off of the land. We're really trying to be selective about what we do on the property. Up until this point, with the exception of a few doe, we've really tried to not shoot any doe. I think only two or three doe have been taken off our property in the last 4 years. And this year on the camera, we've really seen the doe numbers improve. We have at least three or four different doe with at least one or two fawns. So right away, it's telling me this year maybe might be the year to take a couple doe, maybe one each or three doe total. With that being said, we have a goal here on our private land to try to shoot three-year-olds or better. In the beginning, it was very difficult because when you first start off, we don't exactly have all these mature deer walking around. And you have this piece of property that you just got. It's like a new toy or a new car. You want to drive it into the ground, right? So we really had to curb our appetite as far as that was concerned. And now after really managing for 2.5 years, I would say the first 2 years, like I said, was kind of just getting our feet wet. We're in a situation now where this year we have at least two confirmed 4 or 5 year old deer that we're able to hunt. We have a deer that we've had history with. We call him El Toro. He's only shown up once so far this summer, but he is guaranteed 5 years minimum. And we have another deer that we call Posts for his brow tines. And he's hanging around. He's about 4 or 5 years old as well. So we're hoping in New York to be more selective, not go out every weekend, but really play the wind, play the weather, and really be very selective, not just on what we take, but the days that we are in the woods.
Yeah, I mean, you know, being selective is something that is going to have to be thought of when you're a landowner, you know what I mean? So the people who are owning private land out there, you know, being selective is something that you probably have to think about, especially in the Northeast. You know what I mean? Like you said earlier, you know, we don't have the ag fields all over, and there are parts of New Jersey that, you know, lend a little bit better to some of the genes that they're around because they have a little bit more food. But where we are, we're in the mountains. And where you are on your property, you're in the mountains too. And, you know, so you got those mountain deer. They are foragers. I mean, as by nature, deer are already foragers, but those deer will put miles on. And, you know, you want to just create a habitat where they can feel safe and feel comfortable coming back. And, you know, like you said, you've got the does on the property, so you're able to attract some of these bucks. And now you're hoping to harvest them. So that's really cool. And, you know, some of the stuff that I'm doing, again, like I said, you know, I'm not really worrying about being too selective. So I'm on the exact opposite side of the spectrum from you. You know, one of the things that I'm doing is, like I said, I'm really looking to fill the freezer, right? So, you know, me and my wife, we eat pretty much only organic food. We last year were fortunate enough to not really have to buy any red meat. I would say almost none. You know what I mean? Some of the red meat we buy some grass-fed, grass-finished burgers. But for the most part, last year, we were fortunate enough to where we harvested enough meat to where we didn't even have to have that expense. So that's something that can really help people in this time with the economy where, you know, we're really kind of saving ourselves a little bit on grocery bills. And, you know, that I might be a real driver in why a lot of people are also kind of visiting the sport and kind of showing some interest. I think they're trying to do the same thing.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think that's kind of part of where we've come from, right? And I don't want to sit here and sound like my grandparents were in, you know, out there hunting their meat and that's the only way they got to eat. But there is something to be said about getting back in touch with our roots of our ancestors. And at one point, everybody did need to forage and hunt for their own food. And not to say that I can't go to the store and buy something and feed my family, but there's something to be said about going out, putting in the work, and being successful and putting that on the table for your family. Now, with that, one of the other things we really need to take care of this year is predator control. We, over the years, our coyote numbers have really, really, really been increasing to the point where we see them running all year now. We're up there at our family cabin on the lake, and all we hear are coyotes coming from, you know, coyote howling coming from our patch of woods. So open season this year, we see them, we're taking the shot. I will Not to say that if I had a shooter buck on my left and a coyote on my right, that I would shoot the coyote. But if I see a coyote, I'm not going to hold back on taking the shot just because I don't want to ruin a hunt. And with that being said, we really need to focus on historic dates on our property this year. For any of you who are familiar with the Southern Outdoorsman podcast, they talked about historic dates and going back through your cameras and collecting data. So if you want a full rundown on what that's all about and how to do that, I strongly recommend going and finding that episode from the Southern Outdoorsman. But I'll give you a quick breakdown. If you have cameras out and you go back through your pictures from the last 2, 3, 4 years, and you start to find that you had deer that you would consider shooters on a specific camera or in a specific area multiple years in a row on specific dates within, say, a 3 or 4 day range, you need to mark off the 5 days before that day, the 5 days after that day. And any days that you have to hunt in that 10 or 12 day window, you need to be in that tree stand.
And look for cold fronts.
Absolutely.
And look for cold fronts because they're going to be on their feet.
Absolutely. You beat me to the punch. I love what it's called, these special X days, where the temperature is dropping. We have that cold front coming in. The temperature is dropping and the barometric pressure is rising. And when you have those graphs on the weather, like the weather graphs, make an X on the map where, again, the temperature is dropping and the barometric pressure is rising. That day at that time window where that graph intersects, you want to be in the woods.
The freaks come out.
Absolutely. A goosey night. Or what's the other word for it? We got a goosey night or mischief night, they call it in some places. Yeah. You know, so. But yeah, that's pretty much my rundown of New York. Be selective. Try not to, I hate to say ruin the work that we've put in, but we're not putting this work in just to go in and bust all the deer off our property week one, you know? So we definitely want to be selective on how we're doing it and just try to be meticulous about the way we go about hunting our property.
Yeah. All right. So, you know, one of the things that we wanted to touch on today is helping some of the newer people or people who just haven't had the time yet get ready for the season with the time that they have left. So unfortunately, if you haven't done anything yet, your back's up against it. But again, like we said earlier, definitely try to see if there's a place that you can find interest in. Get your boots on the ground, get out there, do some scouting. If you haven't, one of the things that I would say is sharpen your skills. All right. So most people never shoot as much as they think they're going to. They never shoot as much as they would like to. They always say, oh, yeah, I'm going to get out there. I'm going to shoot my bow for an hour every night. And then, you know, all of a sudden it's August and you said, my bow's still got cobwebs on it. You know, so I would say get out there and start shooting that bow if you haven't already and make sure that you feel comfortable with it. You know, one of the other things too that I'll touch on, something that I've started to do this year and something that I really want to expand on is stress shooting. Right? Shooting under stressful conditions, whether that be, you know, having somebody behind you, you know, with a stick, touching your leg, touching your shoulder. Maybe you weren't expecting to lean out off your tree, or if you were, you know, in a position you didn't expect to, and now all of a sudden you got a limb in your face. How are you going to deal with it? You know what I mean? Are you going to let your bow down? Have you drawn back already? What are the different things that you want to train for that you might anticipate happening in the tree? One of the things that we're doing now is we're also filming in the camera, in the tree. You know, sometimes the camera's in the way. Sometimes you got to maneuver. Sometimes you have to sacrifice certain angles because you've got now so much stuff in the tree with you. So practice with your gear, making sure that everything's running properly, making sure that anything that needs to be replaced, like any straps or any cords or anything like that, that might have their last days in front of them, then, you know, make sure that stuff's out of your bag and make sure that, you know, you finish doing that. That's one of the things that I just finished doing. And I recommend doing that for yourself so that you don't have any surprises when that big deer starts walking your way.
For sure. And you touched on a really important point. And actually, if we ever get around to doing some, you know, bow reviews or bow tests along with Andover Hunt and Fish. So if we ever get around to doing these bow reviews, one of the big things that I pay attention to that I really genuinely don't really hear anybody talk about is letting down the bow. Just as important as being able to draw your bow smoothly, you have to be able to let that bow down smoothly.
Yeah, how often? Make sure that when you let your bow down, your arrow doesn't right off the tree.
Exactly, which means you need to have a good knock fit too. And these are rabbit holes that we could jump down for an entire episode on their own. Okay. But
we'll get there.
100%. But think about it. How many times have you drawn on a deer because they're walking, you just need them to take two or three more steps, and next thing you know, they're sitting there feeding in that one spot for 5 minutes?
Yeah. And you know, another thing too, to elaborate a little bit on kind of what I was saying too about getting ready for the season, a little bit of physical exercise can go a long way as well. You know, there's one thing that I've been working on is holding just like a 2 pound weight, 3 pound weight, 5 pound weight up in the air as much as I can. And, you know, I'll sometimes even take an elastic band and I'll hold it back and just practice getting those muscles engaged, because, you know, the longer you can hold that, the better you're going to be. And, you know, again, like you said, you may have to let down in some situations.
Exactly. And the last two bows. So 2 years ago, I went down the rabbit hole, really heavy arrow, really heavy FOC, and my arrows were penetrating like crazy.
I'm still kind of there. I'm still on that heavy arrow train.
Yeah, it's all right. And for the people who have found that found success in it, they love it. And there's nothing wrong with that. But what I found was, in wanting a heavier arrow, it made me want a faster bow, because I never wanted an arrow that was moving too slowly. So I went out and bought the super aggressive bow, 360 feet per second. It shot darts. They were like piss missiles, I swear. But it ripped my arm out of its socket every single time I let down, to the point where I actually have a minor tear in my lead shoulder now because of it. So my last two bows, one of which is a Darton, like we all know, I'm not going to talk about the other one, but my last two bows, at any point in the draw, I could stop and hold. And at any point in the letdown, I can stop and hold. I had complete and utter control over my draw cycle from beginning to end, forward and back. And that is something that cannot be overlooked. Because again, if you draw on a deer and he doesn't give you that shot, or she doesn't give you that shot, and you have to let down, there's a huge difference between being able to let down this slow and having your arm ripped forward. As we all know, deer are able to see off movement. That's why deer bob their head, because they need to see that change in movement. So the less we can move in everything we're doing, the more success you're going to find in the woods, especially in those high, high stress situations,
right? Oh, yeah. That's why you got to practice it.
And it's not like you're thinking about it. It's not in that moment you're like, oh, I need to let down really quietly. You know what I mean? You got to practice that. And the more naturally your bow does that, the better off you're going to be.
Yeah. And one of the things you're going to fall back on is your preparation, right? So you're only as good as you're prepared to be. And, you know, in the situation, if you haven't practiced, you're just going to be basically relying on luck.
Yeah. And I'm going to throw myself under the bus here. You and I found out really quickly yesterday that I was not as prepared for the season as I thought I was. All right. So for any of you who have been following our YouTube channel, you know that I purchased a saddle earlier this summer, and I was really hoping to get into saddle hunting. And the reason I wanted to get into it is because I have a genuine fear of heights. I could get up there pretty okay. It's a little slower. I'm a little bit more cautious. And typically speaking, once I get up and I'm strapped in, I'm comfortable. So for the first time yesterday, Angelo was with me. I decided to climb up to height with my saddle, and I got up there and I got the platform set up, not as quickly as I would like, but I felt that it went okay. But the moment I got up in that tree and I got on that saddle, I mean, my brain just shut off. It would not let me turn to my weak side. My body would not let me turn away from the tree. I don't know if it was because I didn't feel secure. I don't know if it's because the platform was too small. It's not something I'm going to give up on just yet. Let me make that clear. But it's also not something that now I'm going to rush myself or force myself to be good with to then go out and hunt an animal. What I'm probably going to do this year, and you and I have talked about this, I'm probably going to do a hybrid. I'm probably going to go back to my mobile hang-on setup, work with that for the year, but bring my saddle harness with me. So that way I'm up in the platform with a lot of area, and I can feel comfortable standing there, but I can still get that practice and that comfort in with the saddle. And maybe by next year, I'll be ready to go. But the reason why I bring that up is because had I begun practicing with this sooner this year and gotten up to height, I might have been in a better situation. I might have realized earlier this year that I needed more practice with it and spent more time up there. And now I'm in a situation where I have to scrap that idea. Luckily, I never got rid of my mobile setup, my mobile hang-on. So it's a very easy transition back to where I was. But for someone who needs to sell something to be able to get a new product, you don't want to find yourself a month before the season starts and realize that you can't use what you have, and now you don't have what you need.
Yeah, and you know what? There's people who are in various stages of their hunting career, and people who are learning stuff, and people who are getting into new parts of hunting, and there might be someone who's their first time ever, and they bought products that they thought was going to work for them, and they find out, you know what, this probably isn't something that's great for me, and they're going to have limitations. Everybody's going to have limitations. There's no perfect way to do anything. You know, some of the bigger companies that you see out there, they're all pushing product and they're all saying, my product's the best, my product's the best. And most of the gear that we have, and you've done a little bit of a deep dive into your gear, and I'm going to probably do a little bit of a deep dive into mine. But, you know, we've altered our gear. A lot of the things that we have that work for us is because we altered them to fit us, right? So
big
we
DIY.
We found something that worked for us, a strategy or an idea that we thought was good, and we've kind of combined them with other things. And who knows, maybe we'll have some product coming out for people in the future, depending on the feedback that we get. Maybe there's a larger market out there for some of the ideas that we
hint,
have. Hint. But you know, that's a big proponent. I will say all the time, you got to have quality gear, right? So, you know, having one of the things eliminated from the equation is having quality gear that, you know, maybe you have to alter it and that's fine. But knowing that the item itself is only going to be altered the way that you want it to, and it's not going to alter your hunting capabilities because it was made the right way, right? So make sure that you're getting quality gear. Make sure that the gear that you get is going to be something that you feel like you can use, and if not, you know, there's always ways to alter it, or you know, you can always go back and hopefully, you know, you've used it in the time that you have to be able to test it, and then if not, you can return it and make sure that you get yourself set up before the season with the gear that you feel comfortable with.
Sure. And we're not saying go out and break the bank, guys. We're not saying that you have to go out and buy a $300-$500 backpack or setup. What we're saying is do your due diligence, read the reviews, and see what other hunters that are similar to you have found with them. You know, in a day where every product seems to be, in a day where every product seems to be reviewed on YouTube, you could very easily go online and see what works, what doesn't. I knew when I bought my platform, my saddle setup, I knew that it wasn't the greatest, but it was also the cheapest full setup I could find. And the reason I got that one is because I didn't know how I was going to feel with it. I didn't want to go out and spend $600-$800 on a whole saddle setup just to find out I didn't like it. But I also made sure that I went with a reputable brand and a product that had a lot of reviews. And I really have nothing to complain about as far as the product itself is concerned. All the issues I've had with it have to do with me. If anyone's gone back and watched that saddle gear setup video that I made on YouTube, you'll see that my sticks are all DIY. I had the original XLP sticks that fold up. You know, you have the one step on one side, one step on the other, and they fold up and down. I didn't like having one step on both sides. I found that when I had to stand there for a little bit and kind of organize or situate myself, that I found that one leg was getting too tired. So I measured my sticks. I found that they were an inch wide, and I found double steps that I could replace those single steps with. So like Angelo said, you don't have to buy the product and use it exactly how it is. If you have the smarts and the ability to do it, alter it without damaging the safety components of the product, alter it to fit your needs. If you need two steps, put them on, or spend the extra money and buy the extra two step. But I think what we're trying to say is, if you have two different backpacks in your hand and you know that one backpack is a little bit of higher quality than the other, but it's another $20, if that $20 isn't going to break the bank, I would recommend spending the extra $20. A, you're getting the better product, and B, when that other product fails, you are then going to have to go out and spend the money again, which in turn is going to be more than that $20 extra you would have spent in the first place. So my biggest advice is the first time you buy right, buy once, cry once, you know.
I've heard that before.
Yeah.
Yeah, but another thing too is, you know, I really like the fact that, you know, we were able to get that content out there, show people that, you know, it's not an easy process, right? You know, you're going to go out there and you're going to see these guys, they're climbing the saddles, they're using their products, they're doing it fast, they're not really helping you understand exactly how to use it. Obviously, they're not going to be there to demonstrate it to you in person. You're going to have to go out and try it for yourself. So just make sure that you're buying something that you are going to be able to invest the time, make sure that you're doing it correctly. And, you know, if not, you know, you'll see from right here from us, you know, no faking it, right? We're going to show you It's not a perfect process. And there are things that you have to work out. And these are the things that we're hoping that a lot of people are going to be able to relate to. And, you know, we're hoping that, you know, you guys see that we're keeping it real with you and you'll understand, you know, you're going to get it straight. You're going to get a straight shot from us.
Absolutely. I've always been a straight shooter in just about everything I do, you know, so good, bad, or indifferent. Like we've mentioned in the past already, our goal is to bring you real world content for the real world working man or woman. And for good, bad, or indifferent, we're going to share that process with you. Absolutely. So one of the things that I've really been wanting to share, and I actually haven't wanted to, because it's a tactic I've never heard of before. And if too many people hear about it, it wouldn't work anymore. But I actually found that it doesn't work for me in my area, and it wouldn't work for you and yours either. So I'm going to go ahead and share it with the listeners and see if maybe it could benefit some people in other states. One of the biggest things that I started doing was driving down the highway. And in Pennsylvania, in Massachusetts, you have a lot of like pull-offs, you know, like rest areas where you could pull off, park, go to the bathroom, maybe sit at a picnic table or whatever. But what I started to notice was a lot of these rest areas have state game lands right behind them. And instead of having to access all the way from inland and walk towards the highway and cover all that distance, if you can get in from the highway and only have to walk maybe 100 yards to your stand, that'd be awesome. So this past weekend, my wife and I went out for a hike. We went to go take our dog. We parked at one of these rest stops. I was really, really excited to go and do some scouting. And I walked about 30 yards into the woods, and there was an 8-foot fence in both directions as far as I could see. And I felt like such an idiot because you always see the darn fences from the highway. At least in Pennsylvania, New Jersey, they don't know. And I don't even know why they're there. I don't know if it's a trespassing thing or if they're trying to stop the wildlife from crossing the highway.
Yeah. The roads, probably, yeah.
So I should have thought about that. But in New Jersey and Pennsylvania, they fence off all the highways. So for those of you who are living in different states, maybe that might be a tactic that you want to look into. Drive down the highway, pull off at a rest stop, see if you can access from there. Because if you can, just to give you a little bit of insight to how roads and stuff are made, roads typically go through the path of least resistance, okay? So if you have a road that's going over a mountain, chances are that road is going through a natural saddle in the mountain. When they were designing these roads, they wanted to do as little work as possible to the earth to make way for the roads. So a lot of times, finding these spots not far off the road can be an awesome tactic to use because, naturally speaking, those are also the same trails deer historically like to travel. So if you have ability to do that in your state, I strongly recommend trying that as a tactic. I don't think you're going to be disappointed.
Yeah, and, you know, there's a lot of people right now that are just obsessed with walking a mile, 2 miles into the woods. A lot of these different content creators that they're listening to, they're all saying, oh, you know, we got to start finding areas that have no pressure and everybody's scared to walk a mile, walk 2 miles. And, you know, I think you throw that challenge out there and you'll find that there's plenty of people up to the task.
Yeah.
You know, I've done a lot of hunting on public land and there's been times, yeah, for sure, where I've been back in deep in the woods and there's no sign of anybody really being back there. And there has been a little bit of an uptick in, you know, some of the people willing to go back out there. But you know what that does is that leaves the areas closer to the road, like you were saying, overlooked. And there's a lot of times too where I'm scouting and I'll say, you know what, I'm looking for the sign of where the least amount of pressure is. And you might think that that's right by the road. But if you're doing your scouting and you're not only scouting the deer, but you're scouting the people that are also hunting those areas and you find out that they're all walking in, there's no need to go crazy. There's no need to go crazy. You want to hunt where the deer are. Do your homework. Figure out where the people are hunting. Figure out where the thick bedding areas are. Find out where those deer are transitioning from. And you'll be surprised. You could find those deer just about anywhere.
Absolutely. And it also really depends on, like you're saying, the pocket of woods that you're hunting. So I'll give you an example. That piece of property that I wanted to try out from the rest area that I couldn't access, we ended up going down the highway, taking the next exit and finding a way in the backside. And the spot that I found, I shit you not, I walked in the woods 20 yards and I found the biggest cluster of sign that I have ever found on public land. And it was literally, I could see my car from the tree. No trees obstructing it, wide open from the road. And it was just on the border of a little wetland marsh. And so it was actually at the bottom of a ridge. It's right at the bottom where it levels out. At the bottom, it's all marshland that's going into a running stream. And then everything upland of that is just thick pines. I mean, it was perfectly bright daylight, not a cloud in the sky. And once I got into those pines, it was like somebody turned the lights off. And you and I were just talking about that this weekend. It's summertime. Where do these bucks want to be? They want to be in the darkest, gloomiest parts of the woods because that's where it's the coolest. And not just because it's the coolest, they also understand that their coats are really bright right now and they stand out. So by getting into those darker patches of the woods, they're going to feel a little bit more secure and they're going to carry that security out as the year starts going on. Now, to compare that to that one spot that we're talking about in New Jersey, it's not in the middle of nowhere. It's smack dab in the middle of three different living communities and a main road on the other side of the mountain. And what do they have? It is just a massive oak flat. There's just oak trees as far as you can go. Any direction, there's an acorn. So in my opinion, that food source at that point isn't exactly something that you can count on hunting. So what does that leave next? Cover and safety. I'll count those in one. Cover and safety and water. Your favorite tactic is to hunt water early season. And we found last year that worked out. Yeah. And we found out that last year that worked really, really well for you. I think three sits, you took three deer home last year.
Yeah.
And this guy right here. And that guy right there? Yeah. Now, what I found works really well in that same spot is actually hunting closer to the houses. I find that in these areas that have trails.
Within the legal limit.
Always within legal limits. Don't disclaimer, break any laws. Disclaimer. We don't condone any of that. Please don't do that. Right?
But from my deck.
Right? What? But I have found tremendous success. And actually my personal best that's up on the wall. I don't know if you guys can see it in frame right now, but it's up there. And I've had a lot of success hunting closer to the houses. We have found that in this specific area, because there's a lot of public trails and people walk their dogs and they drive quads, even though they're not supposed to, but they're using those trails all day. Now the smell of humans don't really scare the deer off because they're used to it. But what we found is that during the day, they like to avoid those trails if possible. And they kind of make their way around the patch of woods by following the houses and staying closer to the backyards. So when we combine these two things, and if you could find in that spot specifically, I don't need to walk into the woods very far. When I saw my buck last year, I maybe walked 70 yards into the woods, and that's because I went the long way instead of taking the trail. I didn't want to use the trail. I walked in the woods. If I had taken the trail, it would have been even less. But I have to hunt within what works for me, the same way you need to hunt in a way that works for you. Now, what I'm getting better at, but I haven't always been great at, is walking through the woods quietly. I know that the farther I go into the woods and the thicker it gets, the more noise I make going through the woods. I'm just clunky, I guess you could say. When I find these pockets of sign that are closer to the road, A, I'm hunting sign. B, I'm hunting the same type of spot that I would hunt if I went 3 miles into the woods, but now I don't have to go that far. I'm closer to my car. I'm disturbing the ground less. And I'm having these deer come to me in a place that they already want to come to. It's just the best of both worlds or all worlds for me in that case.
Yeah. And it all comes down to preparation, like you said. You know what I mean? Yeah. It's like, yeah, fine. We would go in. We have no problem walking a mile in if that's what it takes. Getting up early, walking in 2 hours before, you know, daylight and you're in your tree and setting it up. And, you know, sometimes it's kind of nice to do it, to be honest with you. It's, you know, it's nice and cool. You go for a nice walk, and we've already talked to some of the listeners about, you know, the experience of letting the woods come alive and being, you know, set up deep in the woods where you can't hear sometimes the highways or the cars moving around, and, you know, you get to hear the experience of, you know, all the different wildlife coming to life and starting their daily process.
It's amazing.
But again, if you're prepared, you don't necessarily have to do all that hard work. So for the people who are still, like we've touched on, the people who are still looking for what can they do from this point on to get ready before the season starts, get prepared. Go out there, put your boots on the ground, do a little bit of research, find out where the pressure is not going to be so you can find out where the deer are going to be, because I guarantee you they're not going to be where the pressure is.
Absolutely. And to touch on something you talked about earlier that I meant to point out was you gotta practice the way you hunt. My dad taught me growing up that, and we've all heard this saying, right? Practice makes perfect. That's not true. practice doesn't always make perfect, because if you're practicing things the wrong way or you're practicing bad habits, they're only going to make you worse at whatever it is you're trying to do. My dad always taught me that perfect practice makes perfect. And it doesn't matter how slow you start, right? So if you're trying to get, if you're trying to learn how to use a climber, or you're trying to learn how to hang on stand, who cares if it takes you an hour to do it the first time? As long as you're doing it every step properly and you're building a system that works for you, it's going to get faster. It's the same thing with shooting. This is 3D season. I absolutely love going to 3D shoots. And to anyone who's made it this far in the video, at the end of the month this year, August 25th, Lincoln Park Archers out of Tewaco, New Jersey is going to have their final 3D shoot of the year. We have, I believe it's 50 targets set up, I think, 48, something like that. We have beautiful shots set up and the ability to make the shots as difficult or as easy as you would like. Now, what I like to do when I go to a 3D shoot is I, A, like to shoot for kill shots, which isn't always in the scoring ring, right? So some targets I'll shoot for a ring because I'm picking a spot to aim at. Others targets I'm shooting for a kill shot. My other piece of advice to you is to make your shot as realistic as possible. If there isn't a tree in the way, move a little bit. So that way the tree is kind of in your line of sight. Make your shots as realistic as possible, because if you can't shoot at a 3D shoot with a tree in your line of sight, I don't know how you're going to do it with the biggest buck of your life walking out, or even the first doe that you've ever had an encounter with. You have to practice the way you're going to hunt. And yeah, lastly, I was going to say the last thing is, and you touched on this, you have to practice with distractions, because no matter how loud someone is screaming, no matter how hard someone's tapping you in the leg, no matter how many laps you run before you take a shot with your bow, I promise you, it is not going to be anywhere near the adrenaline dump that you get when that deer walks out and you're ready to take that shot. I have seen monsters while sitting in my car in my driver's seat, and I could just look at them without a care in the world. But I've had doe walk out and I grab that bow in my hand and I'm shaking like a leaf. So you just want to make sure that you're doing everything you can to prepare yourself for that moment, whatever that may look like.
Yeah. And you know, we're also going to do a deep dive on, I want to do a series this upcoming season of what to do from the moment that you see the deer to the minute that you go and put your hands on the rack, or the minute you go and find it after you've harvested it. I think that there's, you know, a lot of people who they will get the, you know, they'll get the target panic. They'll get the buck fever. You know, they won't practice that. They'll go in their backyard. There's nothing distracting them. You know, there's something to be said about going and practicing in different situations. Maybe you're going to be shooting, maybe the hunting setup you have, you're going to be in some hardwoods, you're going to be shooting into a field. Practice it. Maybe you're going to be sitting on the edge of a field and you're going to be shooting into the travel corridors behind you. Practice it. You're going to be having wide open spaces. You're going to be having tight, narrow windows to be able to, you want to hunt when there's, you're going to be hunting early season when there's a lot of vegetation, when there's still a lot of leaves on this, on the trees. But then, you know, you also, on days that you have the ability to practice shooting, and you can do mid-season practice as well, practice shooting in this different scenarios, because once October, late October comes, November comes, these leaves are falling off, you know, it can be a lot
changes
harder
everything.
But it can be a lot harder to identify some of those small twigs that are branching out that you can't see at a distance. And, you know, that's one of the reasons why too, and I'll touch on this really quickly. I know I was going to say something, but you were finishing a thought at the time about the heavy arrows. Yeah. I have the heavy arrows. And one of the things that a lot of people complain about is, you know, they want the speed, they want this, they want that. I'm not shooting my bow past 30 yards. I'm not. I hunt in very, very thick forest, very thick areas, bedding areas mostly when I'm hunting with the bow. I'm not shooting farther than 30 yards. I'm not. I can't. You can't get an arrow that far. Right, I'm going to be right on top of the deer. I might be able to have a shot, but it, you know, a further shot than that, I'm probably not taking it. I'd rather have the heavy arrow that might need to make it through a small limb, right? That might not have the energy to get deflected. Some of these smaller arrows, you know, just a small little limb can deflect it. And I'm not saying that my arrow is just going to be indestructible because it's heavy. I know that there's limitations to that, and those are the things that I need to learn. But having that heavy arrow is part of the reason I have that, is because of the hunting style that I have, right? Some of the other things that I use, I have other setups, you know what I mean? There's also the ability for me to, you know, use lighter arrow setups if I want to. I know that I have the setup to, change my trajectory depending on the situation that I'm in. You know, so one of the things that I like to do, like I said, is I'm going to practice the way that I'm going to be hunting. If I'm going to be hunting in, you know, late season, if I'm going to be hunting winter bow, practice with your clothes on, practice with your, you know, you're going to have your extra padded clothes so you can stay warm. Practice with that stuff, making sure that your stuff's not interfering, your clothes aren't interfering with your bow. And, you know, just get out there and practice as much as you can so that when you do have that interaction, when you do that at an encounter, the only thing you're worried about is making sure your knees aren't knocking together.
Yeah. And a big piece of advice I have, if you're as anal with your scent control as I am, I don't like to take my hunting clothes out once I get them ready. I've recently come into some information that says that the whole scent control process may
not
be
any scent control as
good as it is, but it's all about what makes you confident, right? And I know that there have been times where, like just last year, I had two or three different deer literally brush up against my tree with my sticks, with my robes, everything on the tree, and didn't even consider the fact that I might even be there. So me personally, at the beginning of the year, I like to get my hunting clothes ready to go, which is coming up very soon. I mean, I have a month left till hunting season. So the next time I go up to the cabin, I'm getting my stuff ready to go. But traditionally what I do is before the season starts, I wash it in the hunting detergent. I put it into a cabinet that I have, and then I put an ozone generator in that cabinet. Now, to me, that gives me the confidence I need to go into the woods. Is that going to work? Is it not? Who knows? But it's just like going to meet a girl at the bar, right? You may walk in there and be like, I got nothing to offer. You have two or three drinks. Next thing you know, you're going up to the finest chick in the bar. You're talking to her because why? You got the confidence, right? So with the scent control, in my opinion, it's a confidence thing. Does it work? Who knows? But if you're like me and you're cautious about your scent, just have a bulky jacket around that you could put on to go shoot with, even in the summer, right? Another thing that not enough people really practice is shooting when your hands are slippery from sweat. So if you want to practice both at the same time, throw a winter jacket on in the spring or in the summer, take a couple shots at the beginning of your session and just get used to shooting. Because I always say this, and I think, Angela, you might agree with me on this. Ever since I was a kid, I go to the range. The only shot that matters to me is my first shot. That first shot is the shot I'm taking at an animal. It's the only opportunity I'm going to have to harvest whatever it is that I'm hunting. So that first shot to me needs to be where I put it. And every shot after that I can use to improve my skill, improve my talents, or so be it.
Yeah, one thing I just thought of too is every single time you go to the range, if you're worried about your first shot, every single time you take that first shot, make sure it's under a different condition, right? Maybe you walk up the first time and you have your jacket on. Maybe the next time that you go to the range, before you take your first shot, you do 50 push-ups. Maybe the next time that you go to the range, you have somebody touching
take
you,
a knee,
making sure that you're being uncomfortable. Sit down in a chair, take a knee, sit Indian style. Do anything that you can that's safe, that helps you understand that there's going to be different conditions. You're going to have things that are going to be in your way that you're going to have to overcome, and you're going to have to be prepared for those things to happen.
Exactly. I think at this point, we've talked about our goals, our expectations. We've kind of talked about a little bit of what we've been doing, going over for the year. We started talking about how to kind of pick spots on a topographic map or kind of how to hone in on where you want to go scouting. And I was going to hold off on the next video, but I just want to give before we wrap up for the day, I kind of just want to, I guess, talk about what I do briefly on how I like to e-scout and kind of figure out where to scout. Because there's a lot of people out there that this is the time of year where they really begin scouting. For me, it all starts on a topo map. And I use every app you could think of. I use Spartan. I use Onyx. I use Google Maps. I use Google Earth. I use every app, anything that I can use to get a different perspective of the land, I use it. Now, being in mountain country, the deer don't always have the food plots to go to or the ag fields. And like we said, some places in Jersey do have that, and some places offer public land ag fields. But for the most part, that's not available to us. So you don't have the draw of, for example, if somebody was hunting in ag country, they could say, okay, there's food over here, there's bedding over there, and there's food over here. So I'm going to hunt between the bedding and the food, or I'm going to hunt between the water and the food. Well, in mountain country, the entire forest is their food source, right? Regardless of where a deer lives, the studies show that a deer, I think, consumes like 65% of its annual diet is woody browse. It doesn't matter if you have food plots. It doesn't matter if you have mineral licks. It doesn't matter if you have sites set up. It doesn't matter. At the end of the day, 65% or more of a deer's annual diet comes from woody browse. So when I'm hunting in the deep woods or I'm hunting in these mountain areas where I don't even have that ag draw, I have to use other features to help hone in on where these deer are going to be. We know that bucks use their sense of smell to help check for doe that are coming into heat. So I like to use thermals. I like to use drainages. I like to use really steep slopes. I also like to look for thickets or clear cuts or bedding areas or lower spots, valleys. And just like us, a deer is going to take the path of least resistance. Excuse me. Now, if you spend enough time looking at a map, you are going to find these features everywhere. But me personally, I will not even walk into a spot if it doesn't have at least three of these features that I'm looking for. For example, maybe I'm hunting the base of a saddle. So I'm hunting the lower part of a saddle. I don't like to get into them. So I'm either hunting the top quarter of the saddle or the bottom quarter of the saddle, depending on the wind. Well, now that saddle is that first component. Well, what else does it need to have? Well, that saddle that where I'm hunting, maybe it has a bench. Maybe it has a flatter area that the deer are going to try to walk through. And maybe as you go around that flatter area, there's a water drainage that comes down. Well, now there's food, there's bedding, there's doe, there's a path of least resistance, and there's water. Those are five different components in that one spot. Now that's somewhere I'm going to go and scout. Now, just like yesterday, it may not pan out. I may go and check that spot out and find that it sucks. But it gives me some type of organization to what I'm going to do. And the most important thing is don't get stuck on only scouting that spot. Scout your way in, scout your way out, and do your very best to try to walk in a different path than you walk out. So that way you can maximize your time scouting in the woods.
Yeah, I mean, we're going to touch on a lot of things in the next episode. That's going to be one of the things that we focus on. And we've got a lot of content in the future coming. We've got a lot of things planned. We can't wait to get out and do more content for you guys. Check out the Wing and Tail Outdoors YouTube channel if you haven't already. We got more videos planned and we've got more podcasts for you every single week. So thank you guys so much for joining us on this Wing and Tail Boys podcast. We'll be back every Thursday with outdoor content for your listening pleasure. If you've given us a 5-star review, we want to thank you again. And if you've listened up until this point and you haven't left us a 5-star review, as Joe Biden says, come on, man.
Come on.
Until next week, I'm Angelo.
I'm Chris.
And remember, success is just a commitment away.
Have a good one, guys.
You're listening to the Sportsman's Empire Podcast Network, and this episode is brought to you by Interstate Batteries. For all of your battery needs, visit your local Interstate Batteries retail store. Interstate Batteries, outrageously dependable.